It starting out with one of my very favorite pieces by him is titled Blues Greasy, with Bobby Timmons on piano, Edgar Willis on bass guitar, and Kenny Dennis on drums. This is from his 1957 album, Work Done. And this is Lead Stories, and I'm Utrice Lead. And we are going to go back to our topic of yesterday, principally because there were quite a few people who did not have a chance to express themselves, although they were in queue. So I don't want to deprive you of your opportunity to talk about the subject that we began talking about yesterday, which was the ambush in Niger, and wanting some questions answered, and we're not the only ones. It turns out that even members of the Armed Services Committee themselves didn't really know what was going on. And we started talking about the fact that it appears, and this is a good example of it, that Washington is operating, as usual, on the need to know or the right to know. The fact that these members of this committee and others in Washington didn't know means that somebody decided they don't need to know. We don't need to know. We, the people, don't need to know what is going on. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a lot that needs to be known. Well, we talked about the fact that this ambush that occurred on October the 4th, in which four U.S. soldiers, Special Forces soldiers, were killed, it opened the door for questions to be raised. What kind of government is this? And is it the same kind of government that we had before? Or is this a new thing happening? But I mentioned that we're seeing more and more the power. It's under the surface power. It's not seen. It's not blatantly seen. But we can't miss it. The power of the generals, the military, which began this trick toward controlling all aspects of government in a way quite a while ago, maybe 20 years ago. It used to be that the military was one part of the equation. We had the legislative aspect of it, which was going to be another part of it. We, the people, having a small part, but a part nonetheless, in framing foreign and domestic policy. Well, that is out of the window. That's gone. A whole new formula has set in, and we see it, I mean, so blatantly with Donald Trump. The military aspect coming more and more to the front of things and setting policy, something that we hadn't seen, certainly not this pronounced before. Right now, President Trump, literally, in my view, is a kind of hostage president. In that, in order to maintain one of the foundational pieces of his run for office and his success in getting there, which is the law and order and world domination, military might, He yielded. In fact, it seems as if he didn't have to yield it. He offered himself to the military. Because all these things that he was talking about in terms of military might, the United States being on top, the United States being great again, all of these things are predicated on a strong military. And then, of course, the world players that he had to deal with are themselves extremely military. That's how they run their countries. The strong man profile. They control things. They have things under control. You look at Duterte in the Philippines. You look at Kim Jong-un in North Korea to some extent. You look at China. You look at many countries that are run virtually by military might that is slightly domesticated so as not to terrify people. And in some cases, they don't care if they terrify people. Duterte doesn't care whether he terrifies people. In fact, he's hoping every day that he's terrifying people. Because sooner or later, they will see the value of this kind of terror. It's a kindly terror. It's a fatherly terror. It's an I want to be your friend terror. But in the meantime, I'll wipe out anybody, and I'll give permission to wipe out anybody who goes against my policies. Here we have a more subtle thing going on in the United States, but in my opinion, just as dangerous. You have the coming to the fore. I mean, they're visible now, visibly in control and visibly maintaining control. They are involved in spheres, the military, that is, where we never were accustomed to them being involved. We were accustomed to them being involved and in a way to protect the country and, you know, that kind of thing. But that too was a kind of shared decision. But the new military that has emerged, they've waited a long time, they've put things in place, and they are controlling, the military controls are controlling the other key decisions that have to be made, like budget allocations. Certain policies are now far more pronounced than they used to be. And we are not reacting with any trepidation about it. Even our policing, very military, and it's going to get more so. We saw this under Obama, and yet Obama had the reputation as a president who was going to end all wars. But under his administration, we saw the militarization of police. I mean, we have tanks rolling in the streets. And especially in targeted communities, and you know which communities those are, we should get very familiar with the presence of the military. We had Trump telling people, look, I'm going to send in the feds and I'm going to send in the military into Chicago. That will solve crime. And ironically, you have people cheering a decision like that, even though it is a terrifying prospect. We have tremendous amount of money allocated for the purchase of new weapons, new kinds of methods of basically waging war, whether it's on the international level or now on the domestic level, the capacity to wage war. I remember, well, this is quite a while ago, must be about 30 years ago or so. Crown Heights was in upheaval, Crown Heights in Brooklyn. And it grew out of tensions between the Orthodox Jewish community and the African community, the African American community, sharing the same space, but not the same attitudes about sharing the same space. There were always conflicts, and from time to time, you know, they will boil over. But this particular incident that I'm referring to is one in which the community just exploded. It involved a woman who had refused to sell her home to Orthodox Jews. They were packing the district. And she just refused. They did everything possible to persuade her to sell her home, and she wouldn't. She was an African-American woman, actually Caribbean. But anyway, the community exploded after it was reported that several young men, presumably attached to the yeshiva next door, which is a Jewish school, were seen running away from her home, and shortly thereafter, her home was ablaze. The house was burning down. So the implication is they set fire to her house. And this was in the wee hours of the morning, and she could have been killed had it not been for neighbors, you know, making noise and telling her to get out. In response to that, there was a protest. It was loud, but very peaceful, no problems. In that regard. But I had never in my life in New York City ever seen such firepower. I'd never seen it like that. We had cops on foot, cops on motorcycle. We had busloads of cops in the wings waiting if they were to be called. We had the National Guard called out. We had snipers on the roofs of many of the houses as the protest snaked its way along the path that they intended to take. We had the whole community cut off, transportation cut off. You couldn't get through Crown Heights. There was no way, not by bus, not by public transportation, not with your own car. You were not entering Crown Heights that day. The police commissioner himself established a temporary headquarters at the home of a very prominent African-American woman in Crown Heights, and he used that as his temporary headquarters. Now, it's a protest, but it was meant that force should be shown, lethal force. I'm talking close to 3,000 cops, with an addition of at least 1,000 more waiting Never saw this in my life. The police commissioner at the time was Benjamin Ward, an African-American man, and he was running the show as a military operation. And this is like about 30 years ago. We had a very good photographer, several of them, and the pictures were fantastic. And they were on the front page. And people could not believe this was what was happening at the time in New York City, great progressive New York City. It looked like South Africa. I mean, overwhelming force. Nothing compared to that. The main papers, they had a little picture here and so forth, but the enormity of the situation was not reported, not captured. And to me, it was just over the top military response to a community protesting the attempted burning out of a woman and her children out of her house because she refused to sell her house. And the police and other affiliated military officers and so forth were required to report to absolutely put any form of protest down. I, of course, was in the protest. And were it not for the fact that several African-American police officers off duty took it upon themselves. They wore their jackets so that they could easily be identified and formed a phalanx on both the left and the right side of the protest as we marched through Crown Heights as a way to protect us. This was a big thing. And I saw the treatment they got. Fellow officers spitting at them, calling them all kinds of nasty names. But what they were doing was assuring the protesters some degree of safety. And all we were doing was just protesting, exercising our constitutional rights. But the military presence, the police presence, was militarized with snipers all along the route. And so this is where we are again with this president. And this event has brought us to the point where they're taking off the costumes, they're taking off the masks and showing us now where things are and where we are with respect to authority. And so we have to ask questions. We don't know what's going on. So some form of power and authority exists over which we have no control. Members of Congress, whose job it is to know, whose job it is to ask questions, yesterday openly said they had no idea. They had no idea that hundreds of soldiers had been assigned to different spots throughout Africa. In fact, in Niger itself, there is a $100 million complex, an installation that is to be completed shortly. military installation that will be a base for drone station. We're hearing the people didn't know that. We're hearing that the chairman of the committee that has oversight over the military had no idea. So we should now operate on the premise. It used to be, you know, they would huddle someplace in an office down the hall, and, you know, the generals will tell them what the deal is and ask their permission and cooperation in getting XYZ done, or the senators and the president and advisors would huddle together and say, this is what we want to do. We don't need to make it public, but we need to do A, B, C, D, and E. We need budget allocations for that. And that's how they took care of that. Right now, where we are is that the people have no control. And the people elected by the people appear to have no control. There's a whole different system that is in control. And it's doing what it wants to do. And that's why I call Donald Trump a hostage president. He derives a certain amount of safety, political safety, in submitting himself to the desires of the military elite. They're running the show. And they have now fully encroached. They're no longer in the business of war and talking about, you know, national defense and that kind of thing. They're now making policy. They're telling him, this is what's next. So we will have, instead of money being allocated to domestic issues as a priority item, for example, fixing the infrastructure, fixing the healthcare system, fixing the education system, we instead will be buying bigger and better and badder planes, bombers, new warships, because this is what they desire. This is what the military sector of the United States, this is what they've been waiting for. They've been itching. The generals now are at an age where many of them are about to retire. They certainly are retiring age. They're older. And frankly, the war business had slowed down quite a bit. And they want that extra star on that on their epaulets. They want to engage in battle. They want to flex their muscles. It's going to cost, of course. They want their toys. They want to develop military maneuvers that would be named after them. And they can't wait for the opportunity before they sail off into the sunset. They can't wait for the opportunity to make their mark. I had shared with you some time ago a tape of McMaster. General McMaster. And you just listen. He doesn't have to tell you anything. Just listen to what he says. He envisions himself as something of an academician. And He can't wait for an opportunity to demonstrate the maneuvers and the theories and so forth of war. So now they're very close to a very insecure president who knows nothing about diplomacy. He knows nothing about world history. He knows nothing that he needs to know. He doesn't know anything. And right outside of his office is a general who now controls everything that he does. Everyone he sees, everything he talks about. But this cabal, this is my theory, this cabal of generals, because we're seeing it. The transference of their military so-called qualifications into domestic and foreign policy. They're controlling what happens. Okay, so we will continue with our discussion as to what, in your view, is important at this time to take note of in the immediate aftermath of this ambush in Niger. 888-874-4888. And we have Jean from Maryland. You're on the air.
Hey, Utrice. Happy Tuesday to you.
Oh, is it Jean?
No, it's Jean.
Jean, okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
So I'd like to see if I can try to earn my lead story points today.
You'll do just fine, I'm telling you. You'll do fine.
Typically, as Americans, we have very short memories. Now, I seem to recall very clearly George Bush, President George Bush, told us that Saddam Hussein was in Africa trying to find yellow cake uranium. Now, the place he was pointing to was Niger. Mm-hmm. I also remember the last congressional testimony given by Don Rumsfeld was seeking funding for a new plant that was designed to process uranium. And so I'll ask you, what were these troops doing in Niger?
Well, it turns out we're asking each other. You know, Niger, we have to see Niger not as an exception. See, Niger has become the rule. Niger is now typical of the relationship, if you could call it that, the predatory relationship between African countries and others outside of it, realizing that indeed they're missing out. Here is everything they could ever have: mineral resources, agricultural resources. So everybody has an interest in Africa. Just like right now, we're seeing what's happening to Puerto Rico. Just yesterday, a contractor in Montana, a very small company, they don't even have a dozen employees, was selected to get the contract to restore electricity, a $300 million contract. And of course, that's because people know each other. They're not saying it. But this is what is going on in Africa. This is what is going on throughout the black world and the so-called third world. This is the story behind much of the warfare that some nations have reached a breaking point about, this business of people, a constant flow of military troops representing all kinds of interests coming through their countries, waging war for things that people can't understand. What is the problem here? Why are you attacking us? We've lived here for thousands of years. We are not troubling you. We're not bothering you. Next thing you know, you're establishing all these military outposts. France is the recolonization of Africa. And this is what this is exposing. Our government necessarily is going to be behaving very differently, which will involve us paying attention to the boundaries that are being hurdled over with incredible ease. It used to be they have to have hearings. It used to be they have to have votes. It used to be that the component parts would be operating and would be part of the decision, whatever that decision eventually would be. That's been dispensed with. So I'm saying we should see Niger as the big picture symbol of what is really going on, because everybody else is behaving like that. France is behaving like that. Britain is behaving like that. Canada is behaving like that. China. And that's what's going on.
There is a very interesting woman. Her name is Catherine Austin Fitz. And she takes a very, very close look at funding and how the Treasury works and how the money that has disappeared gets used. She might be very interesting for you to have on the broadcast one day. I'd be very interested to hear you have a dialogue with her. Catherine Austin Fitz, F-I-T-T-S.
Oh, okay. I wrote it down wrong. I wrote F-I-T-Z. Okay, I will.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. For calling in and getting us started today. Ma'at, you're on the air. Or maybe not. Ma'at, are you there?
Yes, I hope so. Am I there?
Yes, you
Hello?
Are.
Hello? Yes. Hotep and greetings to the beloved family.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah, in terms of the previous caller, the processing of uranium is a French-owned plant or factory in Niger. And how I heard that, and a lot of people have problems with some issues with Democracy Now, such as September 11th and the global warming meme. But today's Democracy Now! Had Horace Campbell, and I'm sure you're familiar with him. He's actually in Luanda, Angola, with the University of Ghana. And he really broke it down in terms of a fraudulent war on terror to control Africa and its resources. And he brought up the fact, I wasn't aware that Obama last year said his worst mistake of his presidency was invading Libya. And he was talking about how Libya was looking to unite the African continent and to also have a one currency. And 6 years ago, the taking out of Libya, he mentioned such an interesting point where the U.S. and France and Britain, they were all supporting an organization that literally was, the name itself said that they were going to genocide or murder or eliminate all black people in Libya. And that did seem to happen. So there's a lot there that I, you know, can't go into, but I think it's probably worthwhile at least looking at the transcript. And there was also a guest, an attorney who's in a contributor to the Black Agenda Report, first name Mark. He was an attorney, and last name started with an F. I can't say it right in front of me right now. And he also said the same thing, and he did an article for The Intercept which has to deal with the whole creation of AfricanCom, what the whole basis of that is, and chickens coming home to roost. Now, my last point.
Well, before you go to the last point, you know, I know Horace very well. I know him very well. The thing is this. There's no one thing. There's no one thing. There are all kinds of things going on all at the same time, being orchestrated all at the same time. So we are baffled as to what, because we are conditioned to believe there's always one thing. It's not one thing. It has to do with the recolonization of Africa. It has to do with the world, the quest for world domination. And because men, it's like the people who are invading and doing all these awful things are hiding behind awful things. And these awful things are things that they instigate to distract, to confuse, to baffle people. But it's never one thing. If it were one thing, then, you know, we could solve that. It is a solvable problem. But it's never one thing.
Yes,
they have all kinds of interests going on. And with regard to Barack Obama, he is certainly not being forthright when he says that, you know, he regrets this. He had a terrible, his administration had a terrible and colonial attitude, if I might say that, toward Africa and the developing world. What exactly did Barack Obama do except facilitate the Clintons and their program for Africa? And being a black man and so forth, you know, it was expected that, well, people would be reluctant to take him to task. But if you remember, when Barack Obama went to Africa, the African leaders were livid with him because he came there pointing fingers at them, blaming them for the conditions of Africa. Because they're corrupt, because they're not taking a keen interest in developing their country and so forth. Barack Obama was not kind to Africa and the developing world. He was a useful tool in order to get entree, if you will, to the waves coming behind him. He was not a friend of Africa. Not a friend of the Caribbean, not a friend of South America, Central and South America. So,
yes.
So we have to be very careful about these things. We have to see, again, this is the same thing with Niger. Resist the urge to see Niger as a singular situation. It isn't. It is not.
Eutrice, I have absolutely no disagreement, and I hope you weren't thinking that I was suggesting that any one thing, just the opposite. Very much so tied to a fraudulent war on terror that began September 11, 2001. The last point I want to make is, saw some reporting by Rachel Maddow as to the role of Chad in all of this. And if you go to...
Let me put it really clearly to you. Everybody's an expert. Rachel Maddow, Amy Goodman,
everybody's an expert.
And all you have to do, I'm urging you to do this. This is why we're discussing this. You do it for yourself. Because they don't know very much more than anybody else. In fact, they could be very dangerous offering an opinion.
Well, let me tell you the connection that makes sense, if I could, in terms of the reporting, because even a broken clock is right two times a day, is that the travel ban, the day of the travel ban was of, Chad was newly included because they didn't have a certain level of passport paper that they could provide. However, what can be documented is that Chad had a whole contingent or militia in terms of protecting Niger. So human rights activists, Chad government itself and others said this is incomprehensible, this travel ban against Chadians. So it's a similar situation to what happened in Yemen when special troop life was lost behind the travel ban, because you always have to depend on people who are indigenous as translators and people who are supporting your agenda. So that's the point that can be documented, that nobody's talking about, essentially, that Chad played a role, and they were so put off by the sudden travel ban that they pulled out their significant contingent and the deaths of the four Green Berets. And that's my last point.
Okay.
Thank you.
I want to caution, whether it is from the so-called progressive groups or whatnot, just do your own thinking. I encourage this. You think for yourself. And there are relevant materials out here, because in the end, whatever we are thinking, and I say we because we're all in this, we're all affected by it. They create a reality for us to react to and to live in that has nothing to do with the truth. All, I mean, 34 countries. Which means what? There are 54 countries. So they are already in possession or substantial possession of a good portion of the African continent, those who wish to plunder it. It isn't this one thing that triggers this or another thing that triggers that. Not at all. It is a combination of things, and things that are going to be done with their secret plans in mind. We can figure out some of it, but we don't know all of it. What they're doing now in preparation for going whole hog on the thing is scary enough. The genocide. And by the way, everybody's in it. Don't forget the church. The Pope the other day had to ask forgiveness for the church's role in genocide. I mean, if you can't figure something crazier than that, everybody has a particular reason for plundering and doing really evil things in the developing world. They have a reason. And you know there's no reason for genocide. Everybody has one. They manufacture one, which is to say they manufacture a reality very different from what we know is happening. Abu from Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity, and I hope you're well, as are your listeners.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and the same to you. I hope you're well.
Thank you very much indeed. Just my two bits here. You know, I have to agree with you that everyone, so to speak, is in Africa. But there's a key difference between China on one hand and the North American, European kind of axis being in Africa. They've been in Africa for over 100 years, And they did just enough to keep them kind of slowly moving along, never really engaging in a wholehearted development assistance or know-how or financing or what have you. China, on the other hand, has come in, and of course it has come in for its own reasons, as all the others have. But China has come in. It has made good deals with African leaders, even though these leaders may not represent the national will. But it's as good a deal as they could have probably gotten. And this happens across Asia and South America, too. But the difference is they did not come in there. And let me just make this very clear. Apparently the Chinese, you know, have their discrimination and all that on the continent of Africa. That is not unlike what the Europeans had done, but that's not to condone it either. But at least they have engaged wholeheartedly in the development of that continent, building up infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. And Africa has something that the Chinese want, and they pay for it, and they've kind of quietly taken over, when I mean taken over in quotation marks, they've taken over the continent, you know, doing a quid pro quo. On the other hand, the Americans are going there, you know, locked and loaded, and using the vanguard of military force to kind of check the Chinese. It's only because the Chinese are there that the Europeans and but especially Americans are there, and so I don't care how many American soldiers are killed there. It doesn't stir one iota in me. Why? Not because I'm not caring, but these our soldiers are doing the bidding of empire. They are the vanguard to go out there and clear out the brush, as it were, and make it good for American businesses. They're not making it safe for you or me. It is this scheme, this racket that's going on. And I don't shed one tear for any American soldier lost there. Not that I'm cold-hearted about it. So that is where I stand on this matter. And as you correctly say, this is a many-pronged kind of reasons for being there, especially with Washington, and yet not wanting to do a thing for the Africans. So that's the key difference in my mind.
Well, you know, I will have to disagree with what you said. There's no difference, in my view. There's no difference between China and any other imperialist country at this time. China is engaging in full blast imperialism. And you take a look at the Caribbean, for example. China has pretty much declared ownership of all of the economies of the Caribbean. And with that, it owns the land, it owns the resources, it owns the labor, it owns the productivity of the entire Caribbean. And you're right, China does entice these kinds of quid pro quos, but there is no quid pro quo. How could you compare China and its robust economy and its military might with Dominica? I mean, what is Dominica going to do to fight against China? It can't. But in the meantime, China has bought up all of the sugar plantations. It has bought up all of the fisheries. It has targeted all of the strategic resources throughout the Caribbean. Imagine that. And it's selling the idea that this is bilateral to bilateral advantage. Absolutely not. China is recolonizing the Caribbean, for sure. And it has made such inroads in Africa as well. It was, in fact, the first major power to solidify itself in Africa because, well, the Americans weren't doing it. Obama went to Africa only after China had locked up so much of its trade. And the United States basically came in a distant second after China. China saw an opportunity. But here's the quid pro quo. What has happened to the environment of Africa? What has happened to the productivity of Africa? What has happened to the notion of African independence? So they look a little more kindly to China because, well, they're fooled with this idea that they're communist or socialist. They don't have the bare knuckles interest as the imperialists in the West. But of course they are imperialists. They have not changed. People want to believe that China has changed, and they're kind of putting the blinders on. But China is in full throttle, full scale acquisition. And this is where the eventual contest will be between East and West, China signifying the power of the East, and it will have many assets because it would have acquired them through these so-called bilateral agreements. There's no equality there with the people who are negotiating with China, the islands who are negotiating with China. They have nothing. Plus, here's the part that worries me. China brings its own employees. When China decided that it was going to build bridges throughout the Caribbean, everybody was so happy that there was going to be work for, you know, locals. No, China has a problem. China does not have enough jobs for its people. So this is one of the techniques that it's using to export the jobs, export the people, create these arrangements where you have these projects going and it would provide jobs, but not for the locals. China is bringing its own people into those places where it's piloting these projects. And the consequence, of course, is that you have throughout the Caribbean now, you have pockets of resistance. These folks are not assimilating. They're not talking to anybody. They're not supporting the local economy. They have everything they need. So they are not contributing in any material way to the communities in which they will be working. China has found a wonderful recipe for responding to its unemployment problem by exporting its workers attached to the projects that it is doing throughout the Caribbean. That's what's happening. So
may I please have a brief rejoinder, and you can have the last word?
Absolutely. No, it's not about me having the last word. It's about us talking.
No, that's fine. But I just want to get this word in because the end of the hour is a privilege. You know, you are very likely 100% correct on the Caribbean, and I won't go there because that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Africa. And, you know, I really value the sovereignty of nations to decide what they want to do. Do they want to have war, you know, people come in there with guns and take over resources? Or do they want to have other people who probably dominate them economically? And I would let the nations decide for themselves. This is done without blood, and although it does mean that it continues the poverty and the penury in these African countries, that's for them to decide, not for me here in America to decide. But when our soldiers are going, and this was Libya, it was to get rid of 30,000 Chinese by causing the coup with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. So, you know, this goes back so long, and, you know, let me just say this, Washington has lost its imagination. It never could, and it can't stand to see these brown people beating them at their own game in the dark continent, no less. Anyway, thank you. You have the last word now.
Yeah, I'm still stuck with my original idea. It's not the way things have been orchestrated. Countries do not have very much independence now, and especially in matters of its economy and control of its resources and so forth. I laugh when I hear people talking and boasting about China and some small country signing a bilateral agreement. I mean, really? That doesn't make sense. When you look at it, the inordinate power that China has collectively as against these smaller nations. And they won't decide. That's the point. China is in charge of that too. It could make people decide what it wants the people to decide because it has such a hefty, it walks in the door with a lot of ammunition. China is in a position now to cause the collapse of many countries. So they go along. They have no choice in a way. They're between a rock and a hard place. So they go along. And everybody pretends that they are equal partners in a business arrangement. That's not true. In this manner, we see that there is no difference. There's no definitive difference between Niger and the Caribbean. It's the same story. It's either China coming to get you or a coalition of the West coming to get you. But
with drones and military power too.
Yes. Yes. They're building the drones right there in Niger. And they're having their own thing right there in Niger.
I don't think the Chinese have drones yet.
Well, it's on its way. But we have to look at this, a power arrangement, lopsided power arrangement, that people are selling as a great arrangement. Coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crowe. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.